Hello and welcome to this episode of Macro Sutra. I'm TCA Sharad Raghavan, Deputy Editor at The Print, and today we're going to be discussing some moves that have been made by global central banks, Japan, Europe, the US, but in particular Japan, because it's done something that's very unusual. It's done something for the first time in 17 years. So we're going to discuss what it has done, what the other central banks have done, and how it's going to impact the world and India, of course. And to discuss all of this, we have with us Radhika Pandey, Associate Professor at NIPFP. Thank you so much, Radhika, for joining us.
Thank you, Sharad.
So now, Radhika, let's start with Japan. So what has it done and why is it so unusual?
So Japan has been following a negative interest rate policy till now, which means that in Japan, if commercial banks deposit reserves with their central bank, then they have to pay an interest rate. Normally, when we like in India or in any other country, when any commercial bank maintains reserves with their central bank, the central bank pays them an interest rate. If we deposit money with bank, then the bank pays us interest rate.
Right.
Now, here in Japan, we have been seeing an inverse case where if an individual or if the bank maintains reserves with the Japan Central Bank, which is the Bank of Japan.
Or if an individual holds a reserve with any bank.
If with any commercial bank, right. Then that individual will have to pay interest rate.
Wow.
Or if the commercial bank is maintaining with the Bank of Japan, then they will have to pay an interest rate. So this was a negative interest rate policy which was adopted in 2016. And this has been dismantled on the 19th of March of 2024. And so they have moved to a positive interest rate regime, just like any other economy, any other central bank that we see across. So that was the unusual thing that has happened.
First time in 17 years.
17 years, yes. So from 2007 till 2016, they were following zero interest rate. They did not raise interest rate.
Okay.
And then in 2016, they made the interest rate negative. So from 2016 to 2024, which is a period of 8 years, they were following negative interest rate, and they have raised interest rate after a span of 17 years. So that's the picture.
Okay, so now this idea of negative interest rates is an unusual one.
Right.
So what is the global and recent historical context for it? Why would they go in for something like this?
Yes, so why will any central bank go in for negative interest rate regime is because they would want to promote spending. They would want to discourage individuals or households from maintaining deposits with banks, but rather use that money for spending. So, but what we saw, if we just go back in time and from late 90s, what was happening in advanced economies was that, you know, a structural shift was happening in the sense that there was a decline in population. There was an increase in aging population, particularly in Japan. And then because of increase in aging population, there was increase in savings. But that savings was not getting translated into higher investments. Mm-hmm. So there was a decline in productivity. And then came the global financial crisis in 2008, which further complicated this set of challenges. So how did the central bank deal with it? Because all of this led to subdued growth. All of this led to deflation because people are not spending. There is excess savings. People are not getting employed. There is no innovation. So all of this leading to subdued growth and lower interest rate regime. So all this, what the central bank did was that they started cutting rates.
Right.
Yeah, to promote investment so that, you know, if the rates will be low, rates of lending will be low, then people will borrow more, they will spend more.
Mm-hmm.
But all of this continued from 2008 onwards, but it again did not make much of a difference. And then finally in 2014, some of the central banks went ahead and introduced negative interest rate policy,
which is penalizing you for putting money in banks.
And ECB, the European Central Bank, was the first central bank to do this, to introduce a negative interest policy to stimulate the economy and to lift inflation, because at that time inflation was near zero in European economies, and same policy was then followed in a number of other countries also, like Swiss National Bank, Sweden, Denmark, and then finally Japan did it in 2016. Right. So Japan adopted this negative interest rate policy in 2016, where the bank was charging an interest rate of 0.1% if banks deposit reserves with the central bank. So now in 2021-22, most of the other central banks reversed this policy, you know, because inflation was rising. We saw Russia-Ukraine war, the pandemic led to a surge in inflation. So most of the central banks did away with this negative interest rate policy.
Right.
And only Japan was left. Till 2014 March, they were following this negative interest rate policy, even though in Japan inflation was higher, but they did not dispense away with this policy of
2024.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Till 19th March, they were following. Most of the central banks reversed that negative interest rate policy in 2022. But Japan continued with this, and they reversed this policy only on the 19th of March, 2024.
Okay, so then the next question has to be, what happened, what is happening in Japan that they felt that they need to reverse this policy that was there for nearly 20 years?
Yeah. So even in Japan from 2022, inflation was rising, but still they continued with negative interest rate policy and all the other policies, you know, to like they were doing quantitative easing, which is like the Japan Central Bank purchasing government bonds and giving money into the hands of the bank so that they start lending. So all the instruments of monetary easing were being followed, even though in Japan also inflation had risen to above 2%.
Which for them is very high.
Yes. So, which for them is very high. Yes.
Right.
So, because their target is again 2%, and it was 2.8%. But the reason why they did not reverse their policy that time was that they thought that this is a transient phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
And they thought that this is primarily led by external factors. And when external factors recede, inflation will again fall to zero. So, they were in no hurry to dismantle the negative interest rate regime and move to a positive interest rate regime. So then what happened? So the trigger was that the wages started to rise. So when wages started to rise, there was a round of negotiations between the corporations and the labor unions. And there they led to this negotiation led to an increase in wages to almost more than 5%. So now your wage rate is higher as compared to inflation.
Right.
So that means that this will lead to higher demand, because if your wages are higher than inflation, it will boost consumer spending. It will give a lift to inflation, which is now domestically driven rather than just externally driven.
Right.
So this was the ultimate trigger, which you know, prompted the central bank officials to move from a negative interest rate regime to a positive interest rate regime.
Right. And also, as we know, as India has also seen, external shocks don't stop.
Yeah.
I mean, from the COVID, from the pandemic, there was the Russia-Ukraine war, now there's Israel, and now to a much smaller extent, there's also the bridge collapse in Baltimore, which is affecting shipping lines and trade. So, I mean, external shocks don't stop. So that can't be your argument that, you know, we'll wait for the external shock to subside and only then will we change our policy. But so now, what are the implications of Japan's actions now that it has moved back to a positive interest rate regime? What are the implications for the world and also for India?
Okay, so what they have done is that earlier the negative interest rate was minus 0.1, as I said. Now they have increased that to not much. So it's a very small increase, but it's like a symbolic thing. It's a shift. It's a switch from negative to positive, from minus 0.1 to 0 to 0.1. So now that's the range of the short-term rates that they have now announced. So it is a very small change in magnitude, and the immediate implication may not be very strong, but what needs to be seen is that, you know, Japanese investors till now, because domestically interest rates were negative, they were mainly investing offshore. They were mainly investing in other countries. Particularly, they are the biggest investors of US treasuries.
So
Japan and China together account, these two economies are the biggest investors of US treasuries. So now slowly as Japan interest rate starts to rise, we should see some reallocation or some movement from US investments to homebound investments, move from Japanese investors moving back from the US to their own home country. If interest rates start to rise in a sustained manner, there won't be any immediate shift, because even now interest rates are very subdued. They're just they have just gotten into the positive territory. But if the interest rates continue to rise, there will be a shift from US treasury to Japan back, because if they are investing in US, there's also the exchange rate risk that they have to bear. They have to come up with hedging cost also. So netting out that, if Japan offers a higher interest rate, there will be a massive exodus from the US treasury securities to back to Japan. And similarly in other economies also, in India also, there is substantial holding in FPIs by Japanese investors. So we could potentially see some kind of reallocation, some kind of movement from external back to domestic investments. But that would happen over a phased manner, depending on, you know, in the next couple of months, what we see of the Japanese interest rates. Do they remain stable at this, or they further raise the interest rate, going by the trajectory of inflation. So that is one implication. The other thing is that in Japan also, debt is a major problem. Like in other advanced
economies, their national debt is off the charts.
Yes. So it's like 265% of GDP.
Yes.
Is their debt. This is only public debt. And if we include households and corporations, it is above 400% of GDP.
Right.
And even till now, they were able to, you know, carry on with this high debt level because interest rates were near zero. But now when interest rates would start rising, this will have implications for their fiscal health, on their interest burden. Mm-hmm. So it may well be that they would not go very fast on raising the interest rate. So this is a very important implication for them, because their debt is a major problem, and they would like to not see very large shifts in interest rates that would hamper their interest burden.
Right. Now, apart from the direct impact on India, as you said, that there is some Japanese holdings here, which could potentially move back to Japan. But also, if there is an exodus of investments from the US to Japan, that is also likely to impact us, because the bond yields in the US will move up, down.
Yes.
And same, India's will move in relation to that.
Correct. So, there are two things that will happen whenever there is this churning of global capital happening.
Mm-hmm.
It will have impact on exchange rates. It will have impact on bond yield. What we saw on the day on which the interest rate hike was announced by Bank of Japan, that contrary to expectations, the Japanese yen fell, because normally if you are raising interest rate, the Japanese yen should have appreciated.
Right.
But it did not, because they were quite, again, very uncertain whether this policy would be a sustained one, or this is just a temporary one. But going forward, there is expectation that Japanese yen would appreciate, because there would be this churning of capital from US to Japan. So if Japan, yen appreciates, then dollar index would depreciate, and that will have implications for India as well. Our exchange rate, our interest rates, our bond yield, because our 10-year bond yield is, it mirrors the trends in the US treasury yield. So the implications for exchange rate, for bond yields, are to be seen over the next couple of months, given that on the one side, Bank of Japan will be moving to a positive interest rate. On the other hand, all the other central banks across the world are now talking about cutting interest rates. So, in fact, 2 days back, Swiss National Bank has already cut interest rates, which is an unexpected move. So they have already cut interest rates. So depending on the timing of cuts, all these changes, there would be a movement in global capital, which would have implications for currency and exchange rate.
Right. And so now let's shift from Japan to the US proper.
Right.
What has the US Federal Reserve done in its latest monetary policy announcement?
Yes. So, you know, US Federal Reserve has kept the interest rate stable. 5.25 to 5.5 is the Fed funds rate, which is their policy rate. Right. They have kept it unchanged because even now inflation is above the 2% target. Mm-hmm. And in the US, they look at two indicators. They look at inflation and they look at employment. These are the right. two factors. For example, in India, we look at inflation and growth. They look at inflation and the labor market condition. So there, both inflation is still above the target and labor market conditions are strong. Therefore, they decided to postpone interest rate cuts. And if we look at their summary of economic projections, which is the statement by each Federal Reserve official about right. their view about interest rate, still they are expecting 3 rate cuts this year. Earlier, this used to be 6 interest rate cuts. Now it is 3. So slowly we are seeing a reduction in the number of interest rate cuts because inflation is still strong. But still, interest rate cuts are very much on the table and we should see later part of the year interest rate cuts announced by the US Fed.
And the same for the European Central Bank. They also took a decision recently. And so what have they done?
Yeah. So in March, European Central Bank also had their meeting and they decided to again maintain status quo on their rates. But the more important highlight of the report was that they have revised downwards their inflation projection. So now they expect okay. that earlier they were expecting that for the current calendar year, inflation would be 2.7%. And now they have reduced their projection to 2.4%. So now they expect that, you know, interest rates are sufficiently high. And if interest rates remain at this level, they will see inflation moving back to the target of 2%. So they are very confident that, the monetary policy rate hikes that they have done are working. So if you just see the figures of ECB and US Fed, there was a peak in 2022. And since then, they have kept the interest rates unchanged. Whereas in the in Japan, if you see, there was, around 0% interest right. rate and only slight uptick. So it's very interesting to see the trajectories of their policy rates over a period of 2 decades.
And these are all developed countries. So, yeah. Just what the different ways that their economies are moving. It's very interesting to
yes,
see.
Yes.
And so now, are there any implications of what Japan has done, the European Central Bank has done, what the US has done? Is there any implication on how the RBI will move? Its next meeting is in early April.
Yeah.
And also, how will all of these decisions, we know about Japan, but how will what's happened in the US and what happened in Europe affect India?
So, de jure, on paper, if we see RBI's interest rate decisions are solely guided by domestic inflation considerations right. and growth considerations. And we have seen that in this financial year, RBI has not tinkered with interest rates. The last hike happened in February 2023. And since then, we have seen interest rates are being, they have been kept at 6.5%. So, right now, we don't see what we should, are going to see is the impact of the dollar index on the rupee. And, now RBI has a number of instruments in its toolkit to insulate the economy from whatever is happening in the US. So it's not just the policy rate. The policy rate may move in accordance with how inflation and growth is moving. But that's domestic. But right. To insulate the impact of what's happening in the US, RBI can intervene in the exchange market, and it right. has been doing aggressively over the last couple of months. We saw RBI intervening on both fronts, appreciation also and depreciation also.
Right, sometimes selling dollars, sometimes buying dollars.
Yes. So there was gross purchase also happening and gross sale also happening, and therefore the net change was not too much. So RBI has a number of instruments in its policy toolkit to influence. It's not just the policy rate. We know RBI does a lot of things to manage liquidity through its variable rate repo and reverse repo auction, its exchange rate. So there are a lot of instruments that RBI follows, but definitely dollar index and the US bond yield are something that is at the back of their minds when they are determining, when they are discussing the state of the domestic economy as well as global economy. And their decisions are also, you know, they do take into account particularly dollar index and the US 10-year bond yields.
Right. And if you all want some insight into how the decision makers, the Monetary Policy Committee, thinks about all of these things, you should go to the RBI website. They have, they periodically update the minutes of the meetings.
Right.
They give the minutes of the meetings with some delay. It's not like the meeting finished today and they'll give you the minutes tomorrow. It comes with some delay, but at least then you can see how each member is thinking. They give statements from each member, what all of them have said, what is the decision that they took. It's absolutely fascinating reading and I would recommend it.
Yeah, there's like, for example, currently there's a lot of discussion about the real interest rate,
right,
which is the nominal interest rate, which is the repo rate minus inflation.
Minus inflation,
so
yes.
That is something which is, you know, determining the discussion, at least of some of the MPC members. So that's very fascinating, as you said.
Absolutely. And so now we have a question from Sankalp. He asks, he says that post-COVID, the inflation spikes have largely been due to external supply shocks rather than structural supply side issues. All of these supply shocks, as I mentioned. Now, most central banks are moving away from the low interest rate regimes of the past. Is it purely to arrest inflation, or are other macroeconomic indicators like debt, trade deficit, current account deficit, and foreign exchange also being targeted?
So as part of the inflation targeting regime, as I said, it is the inflation that is their primary objective.
Right.
For example, in the US, as I said, it is inflation as well as employment. So there are these, you know, dual targets or dual mandates that these central banks have. So that is there. But what is also important is that particularly, you know, the In some of the countries, it was not just the external factor. It was also an implication of what happened after COVID, you know, during COVID, particularly the policy response.
Right.
Because in the US, they followed expansionary fiscal policy and gave a lot of stimulus packages. People had money in their pockets. So when the economy, when the supply side, when the lockdown eased, so that resulted in a spurt in demand and resulted in inflation.
Right.
So coupled with supply bottlenecks to some extent, a rise in demand, in particularly in some of the advanced economies where they give huge fiscal policy stimulus packages, that also contributed to the spurt in inflation. But when we talk about what they are targeting, they are primarily targeting inflation. But these economies are also economies where debt and deficit is a major problem.
Yes.
And those are being targeted through other means and measures, because in the US, they announced that package was announced last week so that they don't again enter into the shutdown condition.
Right.
So all those other indicators are also being targeted, but primarily the monetary policy instrument of repo rate is being used to target inflation.
Okay. And now Lalit has a very pertinent question for us right now, as we are on the cusp of elections, general elections. He asks, should RBI lower interest rates amidst the election cycle, or would it be seen as being a political move by investors?
Yeah, so right now RBI has been maintaining in you know, interest rates, and if we go by their statements, they are particularly concerned about the last mile disinflation challenges. So I think if they do not give in to political pressure, and which I don't see that there is some political pressure currently, I think RBI will go in for their own inflation and growth consideration. They will be driven by their own inflation projections and growth projections to decide whether to cut rates or not, particularly because growth is strong. Had it been the case that growth was subdued, there we could have talked about the possibility of political pressure on the RBI to cut rates. But given that growth is strong, we don't see, and personal credit is again galloping at the double-digit rate, we don't see any implication, or we don't see any possibility of cutting interest rates driven by purely political considerations.
Okay, so there you go. There are three central banks that we have talked about. They've each done significant things and said significant things. The Bank of Japan, most significant of all, has, after 17 years, it's moved from a negative interest rate regime to a positive one. This signals a policy change, and it has implications. Not so much right now, but it will if it continues increasing interest rates. The European Central Bank, on the other hand, has kept rates unchanged, but it has said that inflation is going to come in lower. It's projected lower inflation. So that stands them in good stead. Potentially, they could lower interest rates in the near future. The US Federal Reserve, on the other hand, has said that inflation still is kind of high and employment numbers are looking good. So they're in no tearing hurry to cut interest rates, but they've said that they will cut interest rates in over three different instances in this year. So we'll see how that pans out. But overall, the implication for India is it's direct and indirect, but mostly the RBI, which is going to have its Monetary Policy Committee meeting in the first week of April, it will decide for itself what it needs to do. It does keep an eye on what's happening in the US. But mostly it's domestic factors that decide whether it will keep interest rates unchanged, whether it will cut them, what its stance will be. It's to do with inflation. It's to do with growth. It's not so much to do with politics.